perfect. And so it just depends on the book that you're getting it out of. That's an unusual, I mean,
the grammar book probably is perfect, or at least, but I think
analytical uses preterite. Mm-hmm. What do they use for the? They use future for the imperfect too, don't they?
Yeah, future.
Yeah, preterite future. Yeah, that's a little bit unusual. To each his own, I guess.
I must say, in this last reading assignment, the analytical was ever before me.
No, is that right? Yeah, well, we're getting the real stuff now. See, it's no more playing games, no more toning it down for you. You're plunged into the abyss here. Let's find out how you can swim. But you will need the analytical in, the rest of your life, probably.
Except John didn't need it.
Huh? You either use the analytical or you bluff real good.
I found one word last night. I looked up the meaning of it. I searched the book trying to figure out how in the world it came up with it. I think I found it.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll proceed here then. We had finished verse 1, unless there are any more questions about it. At least by my marker here.
Yeah, I have a question.
All right.
About that word typically.
Mm-hmm.
I put secretly as an adverb. Sin.
Adverb, yeah. Well, to sin instead. Oh, I see.
Yeah. So Joshua instead of none.
Instead of an adjective modifying.
Secretly instead of secretly.
Oh, okay. There might be some debate about that. You know, it's a possibility. Could be adverbial instead of just adjectival to miraglim. Really get the same kind of a sense, you know, whether they're secretly spies or whether he sent them secretly as spies.
I just meant, you know, spies are supposed to be secret, right?
Yeah.
And secret spies.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose, yeah, that's really true. How can you be a spy and not be a spy secretly? That's a good point. He says it's a difficult word, probably meaning secretly. It's pretty hard to analyze it, so that ambiguity is probably definitely there, yes.
Could spying be a participle?
Spying ones?
Two men spying secretly.
Oh, I see. Just taking the thing as verb as a participle, purely a participle. That's a possibility. I think it's, the problem though is that you see miraglim used as a noun all the time, over and over and over again as a noun, and then usually when you see something used that frequently one way, then you're probably inclined to take it that way here. But that maybe was intended, and then used that other as the adverb for it. Okay, on a test, I would probably give you credit for any of those, just because there's enough ambiguity here. In other words, Joshua the son of Nun secretly sent two men spies, you know, or two men spying one, something. That either one would be fine. Okay, we have to allow you some latitude when even the textbook doesn't know what to do with it. Okay, verse 2 then. Who did verse 1 yesterday? Anybody remember? Anybody fess up?
Yeah,
you did it? Okay. So, Eric, why don't you try number 2? John will get a break today. For a while. After that number 10 he did yesterday, he deserves a break. Okay.
And it was sent to the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men have come hither in the night from the sons of Israel to dig out the land."
Okay. Yeah, to dig out the land there. In other words, to thoroughly search it out, explore it. That's a figure speech. Good. Okay, to dig out the land or to search out the land. I'm glad you got that first verb there. It was said. It's a nifal there. So you can, you know, get tripped up.
They also give them the analytical as a variant for Wayomer.
Oh, they do?
Mm-hmm.
It might be. It might be considered that way, because to say it was said and it, and you know, he said, they may be used pretty frequently back and forth that way, depending on how you're viewing the thing.
On on Meraglim,
mm-hmm.
They list it as participle
mm-hmm.
form, basically.
Yeah, it's definitely that.
As part of the verb of a verb to go, well, say they've got two different meanings for it: to go about slandering or backbiting, or to explore or spy out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have regalim, which is foot in a sense, but it's steps
mm-hmm.
or time.
Mm-hmm.
They use it that way. So, and then you put that in the participle form, I guess.
Yep.
Or a regalim is a footman or a foot soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Soldier, or something, I guess.
Yeah. One is tiptoeing through the foreign land and gathering data. Okay. Any questions on verse 2 then? So I'll repeat that. It was said to the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men came hither tonight from the sons of Israel to search out the land or to dig out the land." Okay.
One thing that how Kalila.
Mm hmm.
Kind of like Hayom.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight.
Yeah.
This night.
Yeah, just analogous to Hayom today.
Oh.
Yeah. They came the night, you know, it would be tonight. If it doesn't mean that, it doesn't mean anything, really. They came the night. Yeah, they came hither tonight from the sons of Israel. Mibnei Yisrael. And then an infinite construct here to search out the land with a preposition lama. Okay. Yes.
I understand that that's a nifal.
Yeah. Oh, the first verb form?
Yeah.
Okay, you notice the theri there, waye amar, instead of wayomer, it's waye amar. You've got a different vocalic pattern there.
Page 178. Remark A.
Glad somebody found the page number. I started to
Just above
it,
get amen for amen, and then in remark A it tells you for three generals what happens.
The only deviation from the regular pattern with three generals replaces them in a theri with bathak in the imperfect and related forms. So a theri becomes bathak. Page 178,
Mark A.
Mark A.
And if you look it up above on the imperfect, it has Ye Amin.
Yeah.
Okay, you just put the resh becomes that. It's a three guttural.
Mm-hmm.
And so get the pothak.
Yeah, get the pothak instead. The resh is effectively a guttural in this respect. Yeah. So instead of Ye Amer, it's Ye Amar. Mm-hmm. Is that the one that gave you a problem then? Okay.
I thought it was the other way.
Okay. For the wrong reason? Okay. It was said to the king. Okay. Verse 3. I'll probably say it's your next, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeriko El Raka Lemur Oti Haanashim Havadim Avik Asher Ba'u Labe Steak Ki Lakapor Def Kol Haarit Ba'u.
Okay. Good.
And the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, bring out or send out the men who came to you, who entered into your house, because they came to search out the whole land.
Okay, good. Yes, and the king of Jericho sent unto Rahab, saying, bring out the men And this is your hifil form from Yotzei, you know, to go out. So this is to cause to go out, cause the men to go out, or bring out the men. Yes?
Feminine imperative.
Feminine imperative. Yeah. Singular. That hirikyo there. So it's your imperative form of the feminine suffix. Okay, bring out the men.
You could say cause a line for
them
to be sent forth.
Yeah, that could be. You know, it's hard to know in English how to put those things.
Seems to imply a little bit.
Yeah. That's from the idea of causation. You know, cause them to come out. So there's going to be force involved, whether you're doing it directly yourself or, you know, causing it to happen or something. So bring out or cause to go out the men who have come unto you, who have come into your house. So there's almost redundancy there. Who have come to you, Elaik, Asher, Ba'u, Labeseich, who have come into your house. It's interesting, we're getting some feminine forms here, you know, in the series of feminine things. We don't see that very often. Because to search out the land, they are come. To search out all the land, they come. Or they came. Just Ba'u. Yes?
I looked it up in the text and it's just a plain old prophet, so I don't know.
On Habayim? Oh, okay.
I couldn't find it in the analytical,
mm-hmm.
So I just guessed that it's either a print error or someone used.
Snape just had a full pathak. Okay, maybe just a print error in that case. The only other possibility I can think of would be just for a shortening for meter or rhyme or something, something that's over and above everything else. It's certainly not an interrogative hey. So that's about the only thing you could do there. It may be just a typographical error. Yes. You mean Habayim? Yeah, the Anashim Habayim. Well, you could consider that, since you have Anashim, you could just consider it an adjective. In other words, a participle, an attributive participle. The men who have come into your house. So, the men who have come to you. So, the coming men, the having come men. Just consider it an adjective there. If you didn't have Anashim, then you could just, you know, if you just had Habayim, then you would translate it as a substantive, and the ones having come or something. It was by itself, but you do have Anashim here, so it's just an adjectival usage. Yeah, but that Chatzat Pasach is inexplicable unless there's a meter thing or something that's going on. So you may make the correction.
The men who are coming?
Yes, that'd be fine. The men who have come are coming, or men who have come. Depend. The tense, of course, of a participle is going to be determined by the context. Since they've already come, you know, since she's bringing them out, they've already come. So she can't bring out the men who are yet to come to her. So you probably translate the men who have come to you, just because of the context. But a participle doesn't have any tense value by itself. It's just got the verbal idea, basically, and you have to qualify that by the context. Okay, anybody else? Verse 4, Doug.
Batikak.
Could be could be Watoma or Cain. Usually you see, you know, and she said thus. She said thusly. Is the way I had it there. Now, do they give truly for Cain also? That it's possible that this could be ambiguous. Okay. Yeah, that would be hard to track that one down.
Yeah.
Let me just check, because I want to see if you've got an ambiguity. Okay. So I think you'd have to be able to, thus or so, and then there's honesty. It's the same form.
Can it be part of the idiom, or can it be part of what she said?
Yeah, it can be either one. That's the thing. I think Doug's right there. In other words, you can take it, and the woman said thus, quote, the men came to me. Or you could say, and the woman said, truly the men came to me, but I don't know from where they were. That might even be better, just because she's verifying that they did come to me, but I don't know where. So it's kind of a toss-up, though. It could go either way just as easily.
Well, I took that, isn't may I in from where?
Yes, may I in is from where?
She didn't know where they came from, but I forget.
Okay.
Not where they are presently. They came to her house, but she didn't.
Yeah, from where they were, from where they are. That's the idea. Yes, I see what you're saying as far as the truly. Yeah.
What is Hema?
Hema would be from where? Well, you see, May Ayin is from where, and Hema, they, it's just they. From where, then you have to supply the verb to be. Yeah, is that what they call it? Paragogike? Yeah. Because it's a masculine, you know, so heme was what you would expect. What hema would be.
How did you render that last phrase? I do not know.
But I don't know from where they were. I don't know from where they came from. Or from where they are, I suppose you could say, too. But that is the idea, since they're not there anymore, supposedly.
Since from where is generally a question, I kind of wrote it that way. I don't know. Where are they?
Oh.
From where are they?
Yeah.
You know.
If it comes at the beginning of a phrase or a clause before the verb and so forth, you'd probably take it that way. Yeah. But since she's already said, I don't know, you know, usually you're going to see any of those question words going to come out in front, because they want to tip you off to the question nature of the thing right away.
Maybe it's a directional commentary.
Yeah. They word. I don't know. Wouldn't quite work. Okay, so either way, and she said, thus the men came to me, but I don't know from where they were. Or, and she said, truly the men came to me, but I don't know from where they were. Okay. Verse 5. Peter.
Vaiti Sha'ar Vizgor Vahoshet Vahanashim Yatsau Lo Yadati Ana Haku Hahanashim Rizpo. Maher Akhri and he and the gates were closed in the night, and the men went out, and I do not know whether the men went, and they pursued quickly after them. So they would overtake them.
Okay, a couple things here. First, we have Waihi, so you have a temporal modifier here. You're kind of continuing the clause. So you might say, and it came to pass, and it was that the gate was shut at dark, or it came to pass as the gate was to be shut at dark, as the gate was, you know, see, you've got an infinitive construct here. So as in the shutting of the gate at night, or as the gate was to be shut at dark, or is that the when the gate was shut at night, or something of that nature.
Yeah, I thought I was going to wonder that. Lam.
Yes. Yeah, and the preposition lamet here, the gate to be closed, you know, it's kind of, the gate was about to close, probably the best sense. as the gate was to be shut, was about to be shut at dark, the men went out, and then I do not know. See, she's telling the story. The men went out. I do not know where the men went. And then it becomes an imperative. Pursue them quickly. Pursue quickly after them. For you will overtake them. Or you may overtake them. Yeah, you might overtake them. That'd be fine. Pursue after them quickly. So, Ridfu Maher Acharechem Ki. And then this, it's got a pronominal suffix on it. It's just an imperfect form here, and second person masculine plural. Tasigu Otham would be the equivalent. So Tasigun. Tasigun. This is the part we haven't had yet as far as putting these suffixes on. So you will overtake them, or you may overtake them, to put it in the modal sense. So, and it came to pass, as the gate was to be shut at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue quickly after them, for you will overtake them, or you may overtake them. Okay. And notice that yadati, remember that verb to know, it's got a perfect form here, but you often translate it in the present. I do not know, or I did not know, you could say. But since the issue is right now, and she's being talked, you know, to right now about her information and so forth, you probably translate, I do not know. Okay. And she's lying, but she's going to be justified for it. Okay, verse 6, John.
Wahi Ela Hagaga. And she hit them, and here this ha'aruko, is that passive participle, is that correct?
That's
the only thing I
can... Ha'aruko, yes, it's a call passive participle.
Okay. So then what I have here, this is kind of strange with the law, it's kind of the way I worded it. She hit them in the, having been set in order by her flax of the tree.
Okay, that's not too bad. Yeah, she hid them in or with the stalks of flax having been arranged for her or by her. I suppose it could go either way.
I took it as by her because she's the one that hid them in it. So
yeah.
It was
it's to her. You know, it might just arrange to her, but it'd be by her with reference to her, either by her or for her. So it's a little bit hard to tell, but like you say, context would probably suggest it was by her. Okay, and she brought them, or caused them to go up, brought them up roofward toward the roof, and she hid them with the stalks of flax arranged for her or by her upon the roof.
Yeah, I worded that way to get the passive participle.
Yeah.
It gets kind of strange.
It does get. But they were arranged, you know, they had been arranged, and so they received the action, and it's something that's already taken place, so.
I kind of added that last bit there at the end of the sentence. I said, she hid him in the stalks of flax, the one being laid back on the roof.
Oh, yeah, the ones that had been arranged or had been laid for her. That could be done, too, you know. Because that whole last phrase is just a phrase that's describing the stalks of flax, telling you what kind of stalks of flax they were. Okay, any other questions? Verse 7 then, Tony.
Waha'anashim Radefu. Akrahim.
Akrahim. Yeah. Good old Derek, yeah. Long time no see.
Hayaradin Al Amadaru.
Yeah, can't do anything else with that schwa on the ayin. So. Amabarov.
Waha Sha'ar. Sagaru.
Sagaru.
Acharehim.
Acharehim. Yeah. Okay. Good start with that.
And the men pursue after them. By the way of.
Yeah, you almost have to add a by in there, but by the way of. what they're saying is Derek is used as a preposition here, even though it's really a noun. Oh, the way of the East. Okay, he's well familiar with the idiom.
toward.
In the direction of. Okay.
Stuck on that word, by the way,
what?
That word.
Oh, okay. That's just a proper noun. Hayardane, Jordan.
Oh.
Those will get you every time. You're trying to derive what verb it's from, you know, and all this. Yeah. Hayardane, just a noun. By the way of the Jordan. They pursued after them in the direction of the Jordan, by the way of the Jordan.
Upon the fjords
or the fords. So the fords, the places where they cross. Fjords, I don't know if there's any connection between that or not. This, the fords means the places where they can cross. There's not a brand of automobile back there. The old 1950 Ford sitting over there, rusting in the corner. Okay. Could be. They might. It seems like they're.
Then it goes on to say. Every gate.
Sagar means to close. So. Well, it's they close the gate. The gate is the direct object. Yeah. And they shut the gate or they close
the gate.
Yeah. After them or afterwards. Let me see here. Acharei. Yeah, you probably want to make it afterwards. Because there's no suffix on it or anything. So they shut the gate afterwards. Well, the verb is not a passive verb form. So it's they shut the gate, and gate would have to be considered the direct object here. Mm-hmm. You got the plural, masculine plural ending on this, and gate is singular, and so forth. It would have to be. Okay, and they shut the gate afterwards. Kaasher, then, is your next one. Oh, make it in this context, because of the, make it when, or recording as, or when, or something like that. Yeah, consider rito theme. Consider ha-rota theme as the subject, a substantive participle. So the pursuers, when the pursuers went out, when the pursuers had gone out, acharehim, after them. Right, that's the subject of the verb yatsu. So when the pursuers had, or according as the pursuers had gone out after them. So the total thing, and the men pursued after them by the way of the Jordan as far as the fords, and they shut the gate afterwards when the pursuers had gone out after them. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, so you get a short one, Eric. Number 8.
Vahemam kerem yishtabud vahi alaita eleitim al hagar.
Okay.
They
rested, and she went up to them on the roof. Okay. Before they had laid down, she went up unto them upon the roof. And the Hema may be the same thing as we saw before, they, with the paragogic hey. Only thing I can figure it to be here. And terem, it means before, and it uses the imperfect. So that's why I'm translating it past, even though it's an imperfect form. Terem takes the imperfect. I think they gave that to you in the vocab. So before they had laid down, she went up unto them upon the roof. Mm-hmm.
If we take this literally, as we often do, we can have interesting things going on top of the roof.
Yeah, there have been all kinds of speculation about what's really going on there, you know, whether there's a debate of whether she's really a harlot or not and so forth. And you know, assuming the best, you know, she went up to say to the men and so forth. So I think everybody's assumed the best character there for both the both parties involved. But I don't know, we may be trying to sanctify this. I don't know. There's certainly no direct indication. There just have to be insinuations and so forth.
It's just the same word philosophers like you, so yeah. It seems like that, but it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of a euphemism and so forth, and you have to kind of look at the context and see if that's pretty clear, but, you know. And here is before they had lain down, she went up, so the verb laying down can't be taken in this sense. Because they were going to be laying down themselves and so forth. So I think it's just, you have to look at the context to see if.
I get a picture of a doctor, standing upright somewhere in the.
Yeah.
They finally, because they sort of crouched in and were sitting.
Right.
And
yeah.
And after the other guys went away,
the
guy said they were laying down the roof or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were going to wait and so forth and hide out up there for a while. And till the heat was off, as it were, and then escape. So, and then she's coming up to tell them.
I had confused about that before, because I thought
It may not have been. It's just been, it may have been stacked, you know, things that were arranged. It looks like it wasn't just a big pile of hay, but there were stalks that were arranged,
yeah.
And they were standing up. They could probably crouch down in between the stalks that were standing up, find spaces in between there. Interesting. Have they made movies about this, too? They probably have. I don't remember seeing any on this one. Yeah. Verse 8, okay. And before they had lain down, she went up unto them upon the roof. Before they had lain down, she went up unto them upon the roof. And she said, and she goes on.
Okay, that's not an imperfect form for
it. It is an imperfect form, but it's terum, the, as a preposition, it normally takes the imperfect. So you even when you're even if it's a past tense idea, terum takes the imperfect. I don't know how far back in our vocab we had terum, but you'll probably find a little note on it or something. Could be way back there. 140? That far back? Oh, okay. So you remember it very well. Yeah. Even got the same idiom here. So usually followed by the imperfect regardless of the tense required in English, but terum yishkav before he had lain down. Okay, going on to verse 9 then, and Christ.
Wife Omer, Phil, Ha'anatim, Beda Abti, Ki, Nathan, Yahweh, Makem, Eph, Ha'aret, Waki, Napala, Eumatakem, Aleinu, Waki, Na, Bogu, Kal,
Okay.
And she said to the man, I know that Yahweh gave to you the land, and that the fear of you fell on upon us, and probably upon us, and that they have melted away all the dwellers of the land from your face.
Okay, good, yeah. She said to the men, I know that Yahweh gave you the land, or gave the land to you, and that your fear or terror, the terror or fear of you has fallen or fell upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before your face. Okay. Any questions there on any forms or whatever? This footnote on 10 again has got this, you know, the fact that you got a phenomenal suffix, object suffix. And they have melted away. No, I guess that's just giving you, informing you the verb. There's no suffix on that other than the verb ending. Okay, yeah. Just informing you that vocab word.
All
of the inhabitants of the land, Yoshevim, Yoshevei Haaretz, is that what they got there? Find it, find my spot. Yoshev is dwellers, yeah. Participle form. So, Kol Yoshevei, that'd be your construct plural form, Haaretz, all the dwellers of the land. Before your face, Mipanechem, before your faces. Well, that's kind of hard too. It's before your plural face. And you can actually consider this. They usually use panim, panay, which literally means faces. So before your faces, but they even do that for the singular. You know, referring to a singular person, your faces. And I'm not sure what the idea there is, other than maybe that your face, you know, your countenance. You sometimes you have a smile, sometimes you have a frown. You know.
I like it. She's indicating from the two men, but from.
The nation of Israel, right?
Presence, from your presence.
Yeah, that'd be fine. You're from your presence. That's often the way. That's the one way out of worrying about the plural form there. Yeah. Okay, verse 10. Doug.
Okay.
Got a good one.
Okay, because we
yes, we
have heard that Yahweh was caused to dry up the waters.
Mm-hmm. The Yom Suf? Sea of Weeds or whatever. What does he call it? Sea of Oh, he gives it Red Sea, okay. Literally Sea of Reeds. Okay. It is literally Sea of Reeds, but we know what the liberals implied by that. Yeah, from your faces or from before your face or from before you, yeah. Yeah, that's good. In your coming forth from Egypt or in your going out from Egypt. Or as you were going out from Egypt. Mm-hmm.
And that which you did to the two kings of Amalekite,
mm-hmm.
that were on the other side of the Jordan,
mm-hmm.
to Sidon and to Og, that you destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah. Whom you destroyed, whom you exterminated, whenever. Wiped out. Okay. Good. It's funny, I've been reading my daughter, you know, some portions of this. We're going through the Bible stories in this part. You know, it's hard to not read the Hebrew names, you know, and pronounce them in Hebrew. Of course, she could, the stage she's in, she could just as easily learn in that way as learn in English. Okay, verse 11. Oh, yes, question.
Did he
say
whom you destroyed?
Yeah, I said whom. Just because you got this old psalm, you know, you destroyed them. Yeah, it's a resumptive pronoun. Asher, you know, it's literally which you destroyed them. You know, so whom you destroyed. Huh? You can in your translation, sure. Because it's just not an English way to say things. So you could just say whom you destroyed or whom you exterminated. Or literally which you exterminated them. So with Asher, you don't really know whether it's person or thing or whatever, but the Otham kind of settles it. Yes?
I took that, and then you destroyed them. Back
to oh, and the fact that you destroyed them. Okay. Let's see. The Asher, though, is really making the following phrase attributive to Og and Sion. So I think you want to keep it that way, because Og and Sion, whom you destroyed, you know, Og and Sion, which you destroyed. Otherwise, you would have probably put that phrase, if you were going to say that, you'd probably use a key or something like that and set up a different type of clause construction. Okay, verse 11, and who's next? Peter.
Below, Kama, Od, Ruach, Beish, Nutanakan, E. Yahweh, Elohim, Ken, Hu, Elohim,
And we heard, and our hearts melted, and a spirit in any man did not yet arise before you, because Yahweh your God, He is God in heaven above and upon earth below.
Okay, good. Now, there's a little bit of idiomatic stuff here, but this old ruach, it's, you know, you might say no longer, maybe a little bit better for no longer. And we have heard, and our heart has melted, and no longer arises a spirit in a man before you. And there's low comma, does not arise old any longer, or still, or yet. It is not ruach, a spirit, be'ish in a man. Before you, or before you, yeah. So in a man before you, before your face, because Yahweh your God, He is God in heavens above and on the earth below, beneath. Good. I'll read that one more time. And we have heard, and our heart has melted, and no longer arises a spirit in a man before you, because Yahweh your God, He is God in the heavens above and on the earth below. Okay, good. Any questions?
I have a question on something related to this. I was getting a discussion last night with some guys in our great class in Hebrew, and that we're talking about, when you have an idiomatic expression in Greek or Hebrew, like for instance, glue to vipers, it wouldn't necessarily carry over to our language as well. Do you think it's best you try to get the literal meaning and then try to find a modern-day equivalent?
Yeah, it depends on what kind of translation you're doing. If you're doing an exegesis, then I would say yes. Try to find the literal and then explain to the people what the imagery was and why the literal was as it was, and then give a counterpart. Say it's like this in English. There's different views on this. Like if you some paraphrase translations, they'll just put in the translation of some modern equivalent of it. You run a certain risk there, because what one person considers a modern equivalent, somebody else might not, and there may be some interpretations and so forth involved. And if you're going for a literal translation, I would put the literal image in that it was, even if you didn't understand it, because that's what the text said. And then as long as your text is presenting itself as what it was originally said, and you're not doing this, then the person's got the option of he'll probably have to do some research to find out what that image meant. From a scholarly standpoint, for an exegetical standpoint, I always like to have the literal and try to understand the literal image first and the picture within the language, and then realize secondarily, you know, that this is equivalent to something else like this in English. But that's always the safer way to go. But it depends on what you're doing. You know, if you're reading it to your daughter or something like that, then you want to give something that they can understand. Or if you, you know, depending on the group of people, if you're talking to a brand new convert that doesn't know anything, you know, then you can explain this is what this means. But even there, you can tell them what the literal was and just say, now in Hebrew idiom, this is what this idea had. I usually like to do it that way so that I'm covering all the bases, as it were, and not glossing over it too much. I tend to be more of a literalist, just because when you're a teacher of the word, you know, you're going to be a lot more careful than somebody who's just got a casual acquaintance with it. And that's the sense I think you can all gain just after you've been exposed to Hebrew. You sure hate to lose that Hebrew picture, you know.
Yeah.
And when you translate a certain way, you know you've lost something in the translation. And so it is a frustration, though, because when you're dealing with somebody who doesn't know Hebrew, you've got to do something. Okay. Lesson 48, got 5 minutes to cover lesson 48. We're not going to make it. So what I'll do is I'll tell you what the assignment is, and we probably won't get all through this tomorrow. I'll probably get through half of it or something, so you may want to start with the first few and just look at them a little bit. Really, there's nothing too much grammatically. Just hit few verbs of geminate roots, and you can pretty much look at the paradigms. Then verbal hindiades and related idioms. You can probably just glance at that to get any answers you'll need, but we'll go through that some more, because that's a very interesting and curious thing. We've already had something analogous to it. Hindiades, by the way, is from Greek. Any Greek students know what hindiades might mean?
Hin is one.
Huh? Yeah, you got it. Hin is one.
Hin through.
Dia, hin, dia, dis, or deuce.
Through two?
Yeah, one through two. One through two is exactly what it means. It's the idea of getting one verbal meaning with two verbs. In other words, you take two and get one total meaning out of it, one through two. And so this is a mechanism where they put a couple of verbs together. And we had something similar with halak. Remember, some of the idiom with halak is in this category. But there's some more general ones here. So we'll get into that tomorrow. But let me just give you the assignment so you know ahead of time what we're doing. Part A, number 1 and 5 and 10. Part A, number 1, 5, and 10. Part C, number 1, 6, and 12. Part C, number 1, 6, and 12. And then Part D, all of that. That's resuming the story of Rahab and spies. So we'll get as far as we can with that tomorrow, but I don't think we'll get all the way through that. Okay. I'm just looking at this... Hiphil stems. This is, I think this is our last chapter on Hiphil. I hope it is. Yeah. 49, we finally get to Hophal, which is the passive equivalent of the Hiphil. But the geminate verbs, they're always strange. And in the Hiphil, here are the stems. In the perfect, remember we had Savav as a geminate noun. And the geminates are ones that had the last two consonants the same, although in a lot of the forms they lose the last one, so you can't really tell. That's what makes them tough, because it's easy to confuse these with a one yo that sometimes loses it, or one nun that gets assimilated, or three hay that loses the hay on the end. And, you know, in other words, you see one of these short guys, and there's lots of options for them. But the perfect form is hay save for the hiphil. And, you know, you hardly recognize that as a hiphil, except for the vowel points, which raises some questions about the Masoretes and so forth again, but we won't get into that now. The imperfect, Yasev, the converted imperfect, Yasev, the imperative, Hasev, infinitive construct, Hasev, and then if it happens to have a two or three guttural also involved, two, three guttural, because a geminate is going to repeat the second and third, so a two, three, this is actually a two, three guttural. In other words, the last letter of the short form is guttural. You've got hey ra, you've got pafak in the second syllable, ya ra, wa ya ra for the converted imperfect, no retraction stress there, imperative, ha ra, infinitive construct, ha ra. And then your infinitive absolutes, ha save and ha rea, participles, may save and may ra. So he says, note the general but not consistent replacement of theri by the pothic and the final stem syllable before a guttural. So the gutturals tend to have this theri replaced by a pothic. And that only occurs, though, in the third person masculine singular in the perfect. Hey ra, the rest of them get the theri back. So it's hey rea and hey re otha, hey re oth, etc. So, but in the imperfect, you see that especially. In the top of the next page, the first column of the imperfect sub for, you know, Yara, Tara, Tara, Tarei, and Ara, you see that where you would have had the theri before one of these vowels and so forth, or a non guttural, before a guttural, let's see, in the final stem is what I should say, the final stem. You've got pothok most of the places there. But he says it's not consistent, because you can see the next column, most of the time it's seri. So this is one that just, you know, how do you predict this? I don't know. But there's your paradigms for the two types. And then when you get all done with those, it says deviant forms are attested, most frequently those showing a doubling of the first root consonant. And this is the strange thing, because it's actually the final consonant that was doubled in the original geminate, but now you get the first consonant doubled in some of these forms. And we saw the same thing back in section 126 with the geminates in the first place. So you can refer back to that. Okay, that's all the time we have for today, and we'll talk about verbal hendiadys tomorrow. Okay, thank you. Yeah, you can really sound scholarly. Yes, I'll probably get those back. I can't. Let's see, tomorrow's going to have to be this week. I'd like to get them back before you take them over. I'll make an attempt at it tonight. I can't promise it. Yeah, I think I did. Did I get the old book around?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll try to. I can't promise them for tomorrow. But if not, they'll be there Tuesday. We have to do something for Tuesday, so you can review that. But I'll for sure have it to you by Tuesday. And maybe tomorrow. Depends on how long they take.
Rick, they've shown up the boat and the helmet, I think, on diagramming.
Yes, the graphic is it kind of a
gray
and with paperback kind of large, and that's what we're using.
Oh,
you don't have to buy a copy, but you want to be handy. I think so. I think, I'm going to give you most of the, the stuff right out of the book as far as how to set up the diagram, but he's got lots of good examples.